Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host. I train product managers to be product masters. Learn how you can be a product master at the same place where I put the show notes for this episode, and that's at theeverydayinnovator.com/088. You can go there for a summary of the discussion, plus the valuable links, and also get my product mastery roadmap that shows how you can become a product master and not just be a product manager. My son and I had the great pleasure of visiting Youth Digital's headquarters in Chapel Hills, North Carolina. They provide online tech courses for kids ages 8 to 14. And what they are all about is creating the next generation of creators. My son discovered their courses when he was about 10, and he is devouring them as fast as he can, learning about Java programming, 3D graphics and animation, computer game design, and more. And, as I've noticed, frequently laughing in the process as he watches their videos and does the exercises. When we visited their office, Molly, the head of culture development, showed us around and introduced us to the trainers. Then we had the opportunity to talk with Justin Richards, the CEO and founder of Youth Digital, and Aaron Sharp, the head of product development. The interview serves two purposes. We explore the product management aspects of the company, and I expect product managers and innovators will find the topics useful. We also discuss another topic that I really love, and that's preparing the next generation to be leaders in technology and innovation, which is something their products, the e-courses they create, is all about. Most of us have kids in our lives, whether they be nephews and nieces or our own children, or other children that we influence. And because of this, I want you to know about the work that Youth Digital is doing. I managed to not do a good job with the introductions on the interview, which is sort of important when there's more than one person involved, so I'll try to make up for that now. You'll hear my son Cooper a little bit on the interview. His voice is pretty easy to figure out because, being a kid, he sounds like a kid. The first person to speak on the interview after myself is Justin, the CEO. The other voice you'll hear is Aaron, the head of product development. Again, get the summary, all the notes on the discussion, and the transcript at theeverydayinnovator.com/088. Enjoy the discussion. Justin, Aaron, thanks for joining the Everyday Innovators today and talking about Youth Digital.
Of course.
So give us just a little background on what the company is about first.
Sure. So we teach kids ages 8 to 14 how to create with technology, everything from coding in Java all the way over to fashion illustration, and a lot of things in between, animation, 3D printing, game design, app development, all the sorts of things that kids are excited about creating. We teach them how to create, and along the way learning invaluable technology skills, both in terms of development, design, but also project and product management as well in some ways.
So. Yep. And I think about the company really in terms of preparing the next generation and, you know, being technology literate. Mm-hmm. Is that a good way for me to kind of sum it up?
Absolutely. The way we sort of summed it up is just at Youth Digital, we create creators. And our goal is really to inspire the next generation to create with the technology they love, mm-hmm. as opposed to just consume it. So showing kids that iPhones are tools to create with as opposed to just toys to play with.
Absolutely. And Everyday Innovators listening, we touched on a related topic back in episode 25 last year now when we talked about the Future Innovation Leaders course that we did, my wife and I.
Oh, cool.
And that was just to help kids, you know, kind of think about how do you take things from the digital realm and see them take shape in the physical realm. Mm-hmm. That was about robotics and 3D printing and communications and the like. And I discovered you guys through my son, Cooper. Hi, Cooper.
Hi.
Cooper's joining us for the interview. He started taking a Youth Digital course last year and came across that because we were out on this awesome RV trip for a year. Mm. And one of the guys I interviewed was out in Santa Cruz, and he had come up with hardware, a Minecraft server that was intended for schools to be used for problem solving. So you could take the tiny little cube server into a classroom with, you know, just Chromebook type things to connect to it, and now have a problem solving environment inside Minecraft. Mm. And that was kind of my first exposure to Minecraft in education. And then
we got interested in Minecraft a little bit and thought, well, what's instead of just spending hours on and playing the game, what's the value here,
right?
And that's how we got sucked into it, was learning. What are you learning? And what was the first thing you learned related to Minecraft,
Cooper? I learned how to make my own Minecraft mod or modification.
Yep. And what was the language related to that?
It's Java.
Yeah. So learning Java programming, which is pretty cool. So let's back up and talk about kind of the roots of Youth Digital. Mm-hmm. When it comes to creating a business, kind of the entrepreneur spirit, I see people going down the path of either they just have a business idea and they're pursuing a business for the sake of, you know, generating revenue, being good mm-hmm. capitalists, or it's a passion project, or they fall in love with a market and they're trying to figure out how to, you know, provide some solution to a market or something else. Tell us the background.
Yeah, so Cooper, how old are you?
I'm 11.
Okay, so when I was 9, a little bit younger than you, I saw a movie called Toy Story. Have you heard of that? Mm-hmm. Toy Story was the first 3D animated movie. Everything up to that point had just been sort of like 2D, like a cartoon. But that was the first one that was in all three dimensions. And I remember as a kid, I loved computers. I loved art. But there really was no way to combine those outside of Microsoft Paint, which is not what Pixar used to make Toy Story. And so I thought to myself, like, I want to be an animator, but I didn't want to wait until college to learn how to animate. I wanted to start animating as a kid, and there's just nowhere to learn how to animate. So then I thought maybe game design. There wasn't anywhere to learn how to make games either. So eventually I found a book a few years later about this big on how to make websites using CSS and HTML. So I started making a website, and I just sort of fell in love with it as a hobby, mm-hmm. as something sort of I did on the side, and went from web design. Then I started doing, you know, using Photoshop, then Illustrator, then through the entire Adobe Creative Suite. And it was something that I liked doing, but also something that allowed me to help pay. I did it in college to actually pay for school. I studied something sort of entirely different, but I ended up getting a job related to both of those. So I studied cross-cultural ethics, so how to work with people from different cultures. Growing up, my family spent some time in Romania, helped setting up computer schools in Romanian orphanages. And so I got to work with a lot of kids in that situation, which is really cool. And so that's what I studied, is how to do that well. I got a job after college teaching at-risk kids in downtown St. Louis how to make websites. Hmm. I never really wanted to be a teacher, but I wanted to make websites when I was a kid, so I was more than happy to teach other students how to make them as well. I moved here to North Carolina about 6 years ago and started tutoring kids as a way to help pay for my tuition, which is really great because I would have done it for free because I just loved it, you know, and I was able to teach kids how to make apps and video games, the kind of stuff that I wanted to learn. And so I was here for about 2 months, and actually Aaron and I had met via phone before either of us moved here, and he moved here in October, and I think like the next day he started teaching as well. We had so many kids who wanted to learn, and so we would take our laptops in bags in the back of our cars and drive to your house and put our laptops out on your, you know, kitchen table, maybe with you and your friends.
And a projector.
And a projector. Yeah. And, you know, we'd wrap around an extension cord, kind of like a Rambo, with all these bags.
A lot of great innovations around cord management. Yeah, exactly. That was really where it started.
Yeah, I mean, we had some pretty sophisticated carrying cases for all the computers, because laptops are pretty heavy, especially back then. And so we just were tutoring out of people's homes. Then we started, like, renting classrooms. And then about 6 months into it, we decided to make online courses. So ever since I'd started teaching, I was always like, man, I wish this was available online. I wish we could make it available online so that kids, no matter where they lived, could learn how to do this, not just mm-hmm. here in this area. So we decided 6 months in to launch our first online course in 2012. We launched it, and our goal was to get 250 kids the first year. We thought that's like almost one a day, so that'd be so awesome. And we ended up hitting 250 in like the first month, which is really cool. So I took a leave of absence from my grad program, and we sort of all started full-time at the point. There was three of us, and then shortly after, four. And we started full-time working on the online courses. So I think, you know, for me at least, this is definitely 100% a passion project.
Passion project.
This is what I wanted to exist when I was your age, and it wasn't there. And by the time that I grew up, it still wasn't there. And so I thought that has to change.
Right.
So, you know, if I could have modded my favorite game as a kid, which is Pokemon, I think I would have fell in love with coding so much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And And, you know, launching the animation course was really exciting for me because that sort of brought, I think, you know, made available to kids around the world a world-class animation course that you can start learning how to animate just like they do at Pixar, even if you're only, you know, 11 years old. In fact, the character animation course that you're taking, a lot of the things there in terms of the facial rigs, the sort of bipedal animations, those are all things that, you know, studios like Pixar would use. And so we really try to connect kids with what is currently happening out in the market, just because education so often lags behind in terms of teaching skill sets that are so outdated, because there's just a lot of process that goes into that. But because we get to make products just for students and their families, we can take some of the really cutting edge stuff and be able to deliver it in sort of a meaningful way online. So it's been a sort of a long journey there. But a lot of things that I learned as a kid making websites and even like videos, I know Aaron also made videos growing up, are sort of the same techniques that we use today, not just making the videos, but making the product, running the company. There's actually a good deal of product management that goes into corralling all of your friends to make a YouTube video.
Right.
And so I think to much longer or bigger extent, rather, our courses teach that because they're entirely focused on the creation of a product from the very start to the very end. And we really strive to have no throwaway things. So you're not learning anything that's not going to make your product awesome, which we use that adjective a lot in our courses.
Yeah,
awesome.
That's extra fluff. And Everyday Innovators, we might be skipping around a little bit. It will all make sense in the end, but I just want to pick up on a few things too. So Cooper, who's 11, and the one that really introduced me to the courses here, and let me start with him. If I were to ask you one of the things that stands out to you most, I think you would tell me, because you've told me this before a few times, that is that you get to use real products. I mean, you know, the real applications, the real software that people working in the industry would work.
Yeah.
It's like you said, like Justin said, what you're doing at Pixar, these are the same sort of tools to some extent, actual tools, and the same sort of things that you would have to do if you were animating there, right?
Absolutely. And of course, Pixar has a multi-million dollar proprietary animation software,
sure.
But we're teaching using a tool set that's going to have the exact same fundamentals so that if you were to sit down beside a Pixar animator and he were to say, you know, I animate by doing this, 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 and this, those exact steps are the steps that you're following as you animate inside of an open source tool in that case.
I think that's a really appealing aspect of what you guys do. And like I said, we're jumping on some. But so listeners, everyone, I'm sure you have kids in your life, even if it's not your own kids and nephews and nieces. Like my kids some time ago gave up on the kids menu at restaurants, right? Because that's for kids.
Yeah.
Yep, even though it might still be appropriate, that's for kids. And and there's other training we've looked at to teach our kids technology. But they're kind of dumbed down and cutesy, and they don't feel real.
Yeah, that's an extremely intentional design decision. And I think there's a few other people in the market who have taken the approach that we've taken, but the majority of them have, rather than, you know, we've created courseware that teaches, you know, real software. They've created, rather, software that then, you know, teaches you how to code, maybe, or teaches you how to make a very simple game. And I think for us, initially, that just would not have been interesting, you know, to us when we were your age as a kids. So we sort of intentionally chose to use, we call it either, it's either professional or sort of stepping stone software. It's software that's going to mirror and lead into a professional tool. We really want it to be a departure into the rest of your life so that this is the place you start and it's not the place you end. And if you sort of create a software solution that's, you know, the student can never escape out of, it becomes more of a destination, which is really cool and fun to use, but may not lead you on to the rest of your, you know, high school, college, and then career, potentially.
Right. So both of you started out doing tutoring in people's homes for website development.
Right. And we did some game design courses as well and a few other things. But yeah.
And I don't know if at the time if there was any master plan. Right. So like for startups, if we were talking about lean startup, right, we'd probably say that's a really good MVP, product to figure out what people want, what, you know, what's appealing.
It was interesting because it sort of happened accidentally. However, we, you know, were able to spend years, right? Like, first of all, teaching with inner city kids, but then also teaching kids at their home. And whenever we got to the point where we're about to launch our online course, we were at that time teaching 20 hours a week just help pay for the bills, you know, after school courses. But really, we were just perfecting the way that we communicated with kids, perfecting the way that we taught the curriculum, perfecting every single thing about it, just out of necessity.
Right.
And then when we made the online courses, we just tried to take what we had learned and transfer that directly over. And I think the biggest thing we probably learned was how to communicate effectively with kids in an engaging and exciting way, you know, despite e-learning's, you know, traditional baggage of being quite boring. And so we were jumping around, acting, you know, crazy in front of kids in person. So we thought, let's just transfer that and turn up the volume a little bit online so that it actually retains, you know, the sort of attention, right? And also be very similar to the types of things that kids spend a lot of time on, which is YouTube.
Right.
And so really trying to make sure it resonated with kids. And then also just learning how to craft the approach to teaching these deep, you know, concepts and also like sort of all the rigid step-by-step stuff, taking what worked well in the classroom and transferring that online. That's like the majority of how we developed our product in the beginning.
Yeah, and I think for me, that was really cool to see that sort of organic transformation of the business from an after-school program to the online, where at least for me, from my perspective, it was such a perfect example of what you would learn in business school, where the business wasn't scalable, you know, just two or three people teaching after school. You know, why don't we just make these courses online? You know, that makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. We're not limited by the number of hours in a day and the number of people in our near geographic region. So that was a pretty cool sort of organic development of a business model, I thought.
So, Aaron, help us understand how you took that and put it online and made it work. Like, you know, like I know humor is an important aspect of the training. How do you make that work online when you're... Because you don't have the energy. If you're in front of someone training them, that's a very different thing than being in a room where you're doing video.
Yeah.
How do you make that work?
I think that, well, first of all, I don't think we knew it was going to work until we, you know, got feedback from our first online student. And then they said, oh, I like this. And, you know, it was like a 4-month delay between developing the entire course, putting it online, getting someone to buy it, having them go through the whole thing, and then seeing if it would, if they'd like it. And it turned out that they did, which is great. Mm-hmm. But in terms of making it exciting, getting that same factor, I think what it comes down to is making sure that in every lesson, everything that you're teaching, there is something exciting that you're actually trying to do. And I think that is why those, what we call the intro videos, where we say, this is what you're going to add to your project, and this is why it's going to be so awesome. We do that in every single video, and we would do that in every single lesson after school. We would always say, you know, it wasn't really a good lesson unless they were adding something awesome. What are you going to get them excited about at the beginning of the lesson?
Mm-hmm.
And so we apply that same thing to every single lesson. We make sure, what is the cool thing you're adding, and what is the skill that you probably have to use in order to make that happen? That's secondary. You got to make sure that you're adding something awesome every time. So I think that's really the main ingredient.
Yeah, and another element is we found quickly that students could not pay attention when they had their hands on a computer to us in person. And so we separated the class into what we called lesson and lab time. So during the lesson time, the computers were all closed, and they're all looking at the front, and we're explaining what the concept is, what the pieces are, what the steps are on our screen, walking through, and then we'd say lab time, and they'd all rotate in their chairs, open their laptops, and actually do the steps. And so it was this really short 3 to 5 minute chunks. So every hour long lesson would just be these chunks. And so when we went online, we did the same thing where we sort of forced them to watch the video. So the video doesn't pop up inside of the coding sort of, you know, or design software. It's, you know, intentionally you watch the video, you pause it, and then you go to your software. Because we knew if kids were trying to watch the video and doing the software at the same time, we'd lose them so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So just nearly everything that we pulled for the online has its roots somewhere in us teaching, you know, 6 kids at a time how to do the same thing in person.
Yeah, that was where you learned the lessons of what worked and what did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you experimented to see what stuck when you moved it online.
And you just get punished, too, you know, in terms of, like, if you're not really exactly clear every single time, then one kid's going to miss the lesson, you know, or this kid's going to forget it, or this doesn't resonate with this kid as much. So you really learn how to speak and talk sort of very intentionally and always consistently. And so in our online courses, we're always, you know, whenever we say copy, always like Control-C or Command-C copy, you know, just because one kid's going to forget it that lesson, you know, and so that sort of rigid intentionality around the words you use and how you use them. Mm-hmm. And you just remember all the kids like, oh, I've, you know, I was teaching this lesson earlier. This kid forgot this thing. I need to make sure I say this in the video, you know, so it's a great proving ground.
A brutal one.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, painful sometimes.
Yeah. But an important one. Yeah. If you just started online, you would have those rapid cycles of getting feedback.
Yeah, right. Right. So, no, not at all.
What was the first product that was online?
Game Design 1. It's our first online course.
And why did you choose that? What was behind knowing that might be a good topic?
It was our most popular one in terms of what kids are doing at our after-school program. Mm-hmm. It was, I think, the one that we've been teaching the longest. And it definitely, you know, I think it just felt like a good place to start. You know, mm-hmm. It had some programming elements. It was game design, which is cool, you know. And we hadn't, a lot of our most popular courses since then, we hadn't actually created yet. And so that sort of, I think, was the natural place to start.
And how do you think about your market? And has that changed? You know, who's the focus of your market that you're selling to? And has it evolved any?
It sort of has followed a similar trajectory as our on-site or after-school, where we started off with initially a lot of homeschool kids mm-hmm. who sort of predisposed to actually, you know, purchase courses. That idea of buying curriculum for a homeschool parent is, mm-hmm. is much different. And also they're extremely well connected digitally. So once someone found out about it, like before I moved here, we had 20 spots open in our tutoring and 20 kids filled it up immediately. Mm-hmm. As soon as some people caught wind, I met a few of them, they just, you know, went crazy. So, which is great because I was homeschooled for a bit growing up. My wife actually was homeschooled all the way through. And so,
yeah, and we've been homeschooling.
Okay.
And there is, it's not so much, I don't want to call it a herd mentality, but there is this herd effect that takes place. If right. someone finds value in mm-hmm. something, you know, at least in our case, all the moms are connected.
Yes.
Right. And very quickly you can spread and yep. word of mouth marketing goes.
Absolutely. And we owe a lot to that, both in terms of our after school presence, but mm-hmm. then also when we launched online, the first place it really resonated was with homeschoolers. And mm-hmm. so I remember, you know, multiple occasions we've had a few homeschool channels that would sell our product.
Right.
And one of them, you know, within the first month was the thing that took us to break even on the project overall. And remember just with Aaron, we were texting each other back and forth to just see the sales coming in. It was so crazy because we used to do like one a day, two a day, whatever. And it was just like 10, 20, 30, 40. You know, it was just like so crazy. And then mm-hmm. when we launched our first Minecraft course, that same homeschool channel doubled the size of our user base in 2 weeks, which was just the most insane thing ever. You know, we were scared that the servers were going to go down. We were scared we wouldn't have enough online teachers to do the support. So everyone at the company became an online teacher for Christmas of 2013 and scaled up all the servers and somehow made it through. So that's where it started, I think. And then sort of similarly, as we sort of grew in the after-school space, we started to attract more people who may not be looking for curriculum, but definitely their kids were interested in this, you know, mm-hmm. whether it was something, you know, that they wanted their kids to be prepared for, you know, computer science, you know, to be such a huge part of their future, or just that their kid had demonstrated a passion for technology and they wanted to support that. We started getting people from the broader, you know, public school, private school communities, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then I think that segment, though, is a bit different than the summer camp segment. So we thought there'd be a lot of carryover between our after-school program and our summer camp program, but they ended up being pretty different. You know, people who are willing to take their kids to an after-school program are investing time into this particular pursuit, right? Whereas camps fill a sort of a more generic need of needing to take, you know, they have to go somewhere during the summer.
Summer activity.
Yeah. And so I think that was sort of interesting to see that two different demos of people who are taking their kids to summer camp, you know, and mm-hmm. then people who are bringing their kid every week to the studio, mm-hmm. different types of people, often different, you know, sort of life situations as well. So I think those are similar for the online demos. It's been really exciting for us that, you know, we have kids in over 100 countries. We hit all 50 states within like the first few months, you know, and just sort of the breadth of different types of people we've been able to reach through it, different geos, mm-hmm. has been really exciting. So now
do you segment that that market out in different ways just to reach them more effectively, or right now is it more, you know, mass broadcast?
So in some ways, I think what we've done up to this point has just been mass broadcast, mm-hmm. because it's just caught on so quickly, right. I think faster than I ever thought it would. And really, it's just, you know, if we can get it in front of a parent and a kid and just you know, engage with them longer than 3 seconds. We usually, you know, this is something the parents are excited about because the computer science, the coding elements. But then also if I, you know, ask almost any student, do you want to make a Minecraft mod? Do you want to make your own app? Do you want to make a fashion collection? Do you want to make your own animated movie? There's almost always a yes in there somewhere. At the same time, we've been really focused moving forward on segmenting our audience based off of the outcomes they're looking for our product to fulfill. And so we've recently, Aaron and I sort of switched a little bit to say what outcomes, you know, sort of the jobs to be done idea. Are people hiring us to complete, you know, just because the market is so new and there are so many different ways to sort of fulfill the need, right? So we might compete with everything from an app to a robot, you know, kit to there are toys now that you can like put together and they code things, right? To a Raspberry Pi, to a book, to a camp, to a course offered at your school. Like all of those in some way are competitors, not just, you know, people also offering online courses. And so really trying to understand what outcomes people are looking for. Especially parents. I think with the students, it's been sort of second nature to us. You know, I just want to make a Minecraft mod that's awesome with a sword that strikes lightning or something. Yeah. But really to understand the parent demo a little bit better, we've sort of been focusing now on what outcomes are parents hiring our product to achieve.
So. Right. Yeah. And for listeners unfamiliar with the jobs to be done terminology, like we covered that maybe a couple of months ago in an episode. I'll put that in the show notes for you to make it easy to find. Good tutorial on jobs to be done idea. So as you talk about that, there were two things that came up I want to dig in. So one, at Christmas time, everyone became a trainer. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I found is an important differentiation for what you guys do. So talk about the actual experience taking a course and how your trainers are involved in that. Because this isn't a just buy the course, kid go through it, mm-hmm. learn what you can from the course sort of program. You have trainers that are doing more than that.
Right. And so there's a few sort of reasons for that. The first is, you know, when I was a kid, I was doing this on my own, teaching myself. I always just wanted a help button, just to click help and mm-hmm. to get, you know, someone to answer me because I would just spend hours troubleshooting. And while that's a really great process to go through, often it's a lot better to go through that process with a mentor. And so we've added that help button to every page of our website so that when kids do run into problems, they can access our teachers and we can help walk them through that, which is, you know, different because the course is asynchronous. So it's video based where we spend the sort of personal touch hours are on overcoming the challenges as opposed to just teaching, walking through the curriculum. Mm. You know, we feel like that can be best done, you know, with someone like Aaron delivering the curriculum. The delivery is going to be great every single time. There's no reason not to record that. But in the where we want to offer that individualized attention is really overcoming those hurdles because mm-hmm. that can be a deal breaker for a kid. You know, if they run into that first challenge, it's really hard to not give up. And so we want to be there for them to help them overcome that. And really, I think that's one of the biggest things that we teach is how to troubleshoot, how to beat the computer when it's all odds are against you. And so I think that's a huge part. It's just that sort of that interface where kids can interact with our online teachers. Yeah. And I think it's a pretty big differential. We don't treat it as, you know, like an FAQ. Like we could just easily put a forum or FAQ up, but I think that's just such a critical teaching moment and one where there's a ton of issues that can come from just offering, like, here's a forum, just fix it yourself, right. You know, especially for an 8, 9, 10, or 11-year-old kid.
Sure. Yeah, and I know as Cooper and I were coming here, Cooper, you rattled off the names of all the people that you recall that you got emails from that have helped you on courses, right? And you remember them.
Certainly. I think a huge part is that sort of personal connection. You know, I think the way we think about it is there's probably, you know, very few software where someone says, hey, this software changed my life. You know, very few support agents or, you know, like help desk, you know, people who change people's lives. But I do think if you look at people who've had a dramatic influence on you, probably your parents, maybe your siblings, but then also your teachers. Mm-hmm. And so first and foremost, we want to have that extremely personal relationship between the instructional design, the person in the videos, and the student, which is why we start every video saying, my name's Justin, and I want to help you make your own Minecraft mod. So it's that sort of journey that you're on together with the person who's the face of the course. But then at the same time, you have those teachers who are there to help you when you run into the issues as well. We just wanted to be a really personal experience because that's what we felt like was lacking in e-learning, as it was called now, right. Sort of ed tech is the word for it. But it's just that personal, right? Especially if you're going to do online mm-hmm. well, I think you have to have that personal aspect where you can name off the people that you're talking to, as opposed to you're never going to do with a book, right? Probably wouldn't come visit a book either, you know? So.
Yeah, this was a great pleasure to get to come visit on site and just see how things work. The other thing you mentioned were parents, right? Yeah. So you guys have to deal with this dual value proposition problem, mm-hmm. right? And, yeah. you know, nonprofits are often in the situation where they might have donors they have to sell to, and also there's the end user, the customer that gets their product, right? B2B type environments where you might have to sell to one person, but someone else is using it. You guys need to sell to a parent and a kid. Mm-hmm. The kid's the user, but they're not the one paying for it.
Right.
How do you manage this dual value proposition?
It's interesting. In our first business plan ever, I pulled it up recently. It's pretty embarrassing. But it does talk about the fact that we have two customers, mm-hmm. The parent and the student, and they mm-hmm. both matter all the way through. And I think, you know, we've sort of now figured out that the parent's mostly involved pre-purchase, obviously, mm-hmm. and the biggest driver there, and then the student post-purchase. And so once that transfer is made and the student logs in for the first time at that point, it becomes solely focused on them because we realize that for what parents want to see out of the product is their kid engaging with it. And so we really serve the parent, I think, through keeping their kid engaged and excited throughout that product. Whereas at the beginning, it's going to be much more, the parent's going to be looking at it, doing research, and then pull the student aside and say, hey, does this look interesting to you? Which is why we have those videos on our web pages to just, you know, quickly show the student. In those videos, we're putting all of the, you know, the awesome shots of the things we'll be able to do, making sure we hit all those pieces, because that's going to be the thing that, you know, we need student approval in that process. So the parent's going to be buying it, but they're always going to say, do you want to do this? Because if you don't want to do it, then there's no reason for me to buy it. You know, and so I think in some ways it is a much tighter relationship maybe than sort of a B2B offering where you have, you know, an end user and who has much different goals than the person yep. purchasing. But at the same time, I think, you know, what we've really tried to do is answer both needs with one product. So from a parent's perspective, you know, they might be tired of staring at the back of an iPhone constantly, you know, playing too much Minecraft without it actually going towards anything purposeful, mm-hmm. And wanting to prepare their kid for the technological future. From a kid's perspective, I wouldn't pitch Cooper that way, though. I would say, hey, do you want to make a sword, you know, in Minecraft? Or, you know, it could be bubble gum, it could be a chicken nugget sword. Do you want to make your own iPhone app? Do you want to make, like, an animated movie like the ones you see in the theater, right? Like, it's a much different conversation. But the answer is the same thing. It's like, this is a course that will teach you how to do that. And we'll also teach them how to, you know, take a computer and turn it into a creative tool instead of just this consuming force. You know, technology is a pretty powerful thing, which can, you know, destroy a lot of kids in terms of, you know, just the amount of hours they put into it. But it can also allow kids to create some amazing things, you know, as well. And so I think we try to answer both of those value props with the same product. And I think that's where we've had a lot of success, but it's not always easy, you know. I think a lot of the time parents, unless they're sitting down with their kids, aren't realizing the extent to which their kids are learning. And a lot of it actually comes as a surprise to them that the stuff we're teaching is professional. They, you know, I think, no, it's educational in general, and it's a good thing. It's a good use of that technology time, but maybe not that their kid could walk into Pixar and converse with an animator, right? Or could call up Mojang and just talk, you know, shop about Eclipse and Java and all that stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, I think, unique. It's definitely a constraint, but also, I think, a good one, you know, as well for us.
Pro tools.
Yeah.
Aaron, can you talk a little bit about how you decide what the products are, right? Of the things that you could go after, all the topics that Youth Digital could pursue, you started with game design. Yeah. I know you have Minecraft. There's mm-hmm. probably some thinking behind adopting that as a topic to train on. And you're working on something now, right, the next mm-hmm. course. What leads the direction in terms of decisions for course topics?
Well, the first one is making sure that we're teaching kids how to make something that they're excited about making. Because I often imagine myself at a homeschool conference or basically talking to a group of kids. And if I can't get them excited in my mind's eye about whatever project that is, like, do you guys want to make a website where you insert something boring? And if I... You know, I don't know. There's a lot of things we've thought about that then you think about, can you get a kid excited about that? Mm-hmm. And you'd be kind of faking it, you know, and with the courses that are successful, I think it's so easy and you get excited about explaining it. You know, for example, server design, I just couldn't believe how awesome the technology was that we'd be putting in these kids' hands. I'm like, instantly update it so that while you're on the server, you're coding. You know, it's just contagious excitement.
Right. And server design is Minecraft.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you probably wouldn't be that excited about making, you know, a back-end server that could host, you know, your
database.
Housing information, or who knows what, some database to hold
data. I need a contact manager. Who bring you a program, a contact manager? Yeah. I just need names, addresses, phone numbers.
Yeah.
I can make one in Minecraft, maybe.
So I think the server design one is interesting to the extent that kids want to make a Minecraft server and they're imagining, oh man, oh yeah, I could do this and this and this. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I mean, that's the number one decision. And then can we teach that? The next question is, can we teach that in a way that we could, you know, say to parents, these are real skills that they're learning, are really important skills. Right. I'd say that's question number one and question number two. And then following that are a bunch of other questions, but all of those are really sort of tertiary compared to the first number one and number two, unless you'd like me to talk about those as
that's
well.
That's okay. And for listeners, Aaron's actually looking at a list of questions. So you guys have some process in place to think structurally about what's next. Let me ask you about the Minecraft part. So I don't know, you went from game design. I don't know if Minecraft was next or this played into things. You know, so as a parent, we have friends who have kids are on Minecraft all day, which for us is a little alarming that, you know, since we homeschool, there has to be time for learning in the day too. And so we had some resistance to this thing called Minecraft, you know, because of this. But also there's this trend going on that you can't miss, right? And so Cooper's with friends that are talking about Minecraft, and you can't just not be exposed to this and, you know, not somehow miss it. So there was this opportunity to, okay, you can dive into Minecraft, but use it as a learning tool, which now made this thing become much more of a positive idea for us, right? Mm-hmm. And that notion of this is a huge wave of a trend.
Right.
And I'm sure trends play into this, at least in the terms of, like you said, Aaron, you know, can I talk to a kid in terms of that would make this really exciting to them, right? And latching hold of something that is already probably in their reality of what they're thinking about talking about is an aspect of this too. Was that part of the Minecraft thinking? I don't know how trends factors into your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think definitely, just because, like Aaron said, the first question is to ask a kid, you know, what do you want to create? And, you know, we spend a lot of time with students, and so it was pretty obvious to us early on that this thing called Minecraft was here to stay, you know, and we just saw so many of our kids just loving it, you know what I mean? And so I think anytime we see something like that sort of take hold and, like, you know, students be excited about it, that's where we're looking to answer that first question is really, you know, and anytime we meet a student, actually, we'll just quiz them about, like, hey, what's on your iPad? You know, what's on your computer? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you playing right now?
So you're doing customer research all the time.
Exactly. Whenever we meet students, you know, it's also great because, you know, so none of us ever played the Xbox version of Minecraft. And before we make a Minecraft course, we know everything there is to know about Minecraft. And so as part of my job, Cooper, I had to buy an Xbox, and which we didn't have the time, and Minecraft, I had to beat Minecraft on Xbox. So it's a pretty tough day at work, you know. But we wanted to be able to make all these.
It's probably a late night for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. But we have to be able to make jokes about, you know, blaze rods and gas and all these things, right? So we want to really intimately know that world, so that when students come up to us and ask us about Herobrine or about any of the things they know or whatever, we have to have some street cred, you know.
Right.
And so, so I think, you know, when sort of Minecraft started trending, it was just really obvious to us that kids wanted to do this. We sort of started digging deeper. We found out that, you know, modding was a pretty awesome way to learn how to get exposure to coding. Mm-hmm. You know, we're fortunate to be pretty early on in that regard. And so I think that's what we're constantly trying to do, is figure out what's next. But, you know, Minecraft's popularity is just off the charts compared to anything else we've ever seen.
Right.
And, you know, like you said, there's lots of students who spend a lot of time with it, and we sort of view our role as intermediaries between students and parents a lot of times, sometimes to kids, saying that playing Minecraft all day is not necessarily the best way to become, you know, great at computers. It's not necessarily the best use of your time. In fact, wouldn't you rather spend that adding your own stuff into Minecraft? Like, how much cooler is that?
Right.
And then sharing that with your friends, making revisions off their feedback. You know, there's some pitching we do there. Conversely with the parents, which is less of a discussion than it used to be, but we'd say, you know, making a video game is so much different than playing one, you know, because video games especially had such a bad, you know, sort of contextual, you know, like, why would my kid doing more video game stuff? I don't want that. You know, the difference between making a game and playing one is the same difference between watching a movie and filming a movie, which are entirely different, you know, enterprises. And so we sort of found ourselves talking, you know, both of parents and students, depending on the nature of it, you know. And
right. I think part of the magic sauce, and be glad to get your perspective on this too, though, is this capability to have, you know, it's not a blank canvas. You know what the pieces are, whether it's game design or mm-hmm. Minecraft programming, you know what the pieces are, but it's a pretty blank canvas in the sense of you get to create inside of that space. Right. And so immediately you have the opportunity to jump in and start customizing it mm-hmm. to the way you want it to be. Yeah. Right. And I think it's a very engaging way to bring kids into things. When we were doing our Future Innovation Leaders class, the kids love the 3D design work mm-hmm. because, you know, we started them with some basic constructs, you know, like here's letters and you can print your name and you know, right. do that sort of thing. And they quickly just ran with building their own designs out in 3D space in a graphics tool and then get to see it, print it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that capability to see what they do quickly right. really turns the imagination wild.
Absolutely. And we try to take care of a lot of the more rudimentary work that has to be done. For example, when making animation, you have to have someone who makes the 3D models, who mm-hmm. rigs them, who prepares them with all the various, you know, elements, who gets all the assets in the right place, who configures the software. We write a lot of plugins for it, but all of that's installed with just a one-click installer.
Right.
And really try to put the student in the driver's seat of what the, you know, creative director would be, of the, you know, the lead animator, of whoever would be the person making all the calls, so they get to have the most fun job while still creating something that looks professional, because they get to have a whole team helping them. They just, you know, don't realize that whole team has created this, you know, all these assets we create in-house, all the installers we create in-house, and get it all set up so that they can just sort of be the lead on the project, you know, doing all the really awesome programming that makes the quick changes, as opposed to, you know, setting up all of the classes and the object structures and all the different things.
Right.
Because that's the most exciting part. That's what you want to do, right? We think that you get started with that piece, you can learn the other pieces later, you know? And you want to, I think, start with the stuff that's simple, but also really goes a long way in terms of huge payoffs. Mm-hmm. And then after you've experienced that for a while, then you start asking more questions. Well, how do I set up these files differently? How do I make my own model? How do I make my own animation rig? And we have students then who start exploring that. But much better to explore that after you've made an animation than, you know...
It's huge yeah. intrinsic motivation, right? Mm-hmm. You're preparing kids to have that internal desire to dig deeper on their own.
Right.
And learn more about this.
Yep.
I just want to highlight, I think there's a lot of smart steps that you guys have made, whether purposeful or accident, right? And a lot of businesses are accidental and, mm-hmm. you know, things they discover and we want to experiment and find out what works and doesn't work right and could on pass the work. Doing the work in you know, face-to-face with people to find out what works with kids and doesn't. Gosh, you just learned so much from that experience.
Right.
It was really rich. Stumbling onto the homeschool market where mm-hmm. it quickly moves through homeschool communities pretty quickly.
Right.
If it is something offers value, they'll tell their friends about it, you know, and that's just brilliant. And then, you know, a big trend like Minecraft to hook onto is a really good move too. Were there other actions that you took to see your sales grow so quickly? You know, for Youth Digital to, you haven't come out of nowhere, but it hasn't been,
right.
it's not that old of a company. Mm-hmm. You've been doing this and hugely popular now.
Yeah, I think definitely finding, you know, some key channels really opened things up. So mm-hmm. I mentioned that homeschool channel. So we, you know, go to homeschool conferences like Aaron mentioned, and it'd be great. We'd be, you know, talking with a lot of parents. Our booth's always full. We'll sell a lot of copies, but it wasn't until we sort of found existing spaces, you know, in most cases of them online websites that had, you know, a large amount of homeschoolers that they would, you know, have one or two key people evaluate the product. If they liked it, they would post it there. And, you know, gaining access to those channels, I think, was so critical for us, because we would just drop it in the channel and it would just erupt in the channel. Mm-hmm. And for us to build up a channel, you know, of 100,000 or a million people would just take forever, you know.
Right.
And so as a product company, we're sort of fortunate to be able to find channels like that that really sort of took us, I think, to that next level. I mean, word of mouth, I think, drives most of what we do. Mm-hmm. But getting it in front of people, I think we owe a lot to our channel partners.
Okay. So. And I know we found your products also on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
I just found that kind of creative all by itself, that you have
you're
an e-course provider and you have a physical product on Amazon that one can buy. And I was curious how all that worked. That was interesting. You can get a box in the mail mm-hmm. that has a code to let me go sign up for this e-course.
Yep.
Did that play into your growth cycle? What did you learn from that experiment?
Well, we always, I mean, you know, we did that primarily to go to Amazon, because at the time they didn't offer digital download. And mm-hmm. so they did for like, you know, movies and songs, but not for online course codes, right? So they offer it now, digital fulfillment, but at the time they didn't offer it, and we knew we wanted to be on Amazon. And so, you know, we looked at what Rosetta was doing. They're very similar, and they were just sending a box with a code in it. And so we started sending boxes with codes in them. But it was sort of natural because I think since the beginning, before we even did Game Design 1, we always wanted it to be a product, never right. a course, because we needed this to be something that you want to get for Christmas, you know, not that you're going to take like as, you know, right after algebra, you know, just as a slog through. And so we very rarely refer to it as a course in the actual product itself experience. It's always Game Design 1. It's always that strong product title. And so even when we first launched it and we went to our first homeschool convention, we had boxes made for it because we always wanted it to be like something that you could take home that could be yours, you know, that could have that sort of that tactile connection.
And you could wrap it up if you wanted
to. Exactly. And so we have a lot of people who do that, you know, and we've since included stickers and posters and all cool things inside of that. But always, I think we always viewed it as a product just from the beginning, you know, just sort of crazy because neither of us had done any sort of product design, you know, whatsoever, except for as a kid making websites and videos and all these sort of, you know, different experiences that were things we had and, you know, thought of, created, packaged, and shared.
And I was going to ask you guys about how you just develop courses. For the sake of time, I think I'll point listeners to the video because you have a video online about how you develop courses, right? Is that available to the public?
It is not. It is just in our portal, I think. Yes.
Is it possible to let listeners have access to that, or can you guys think about that?
I think we can, yeah. We can set up a link.
Because Everyday Innovators, it's a I found it useful to look at and entertaining also.
Geared towards kids.
It's geared towards kids. But it gives some good, nice insights, too, and how to, whatever your market is, how to appeal to the market and the communications. I think it's a good example. As listeners know, I always ask for an innovation quote towards the end of interview time. And I had asked you guys two for one. And I understand this is one that you did both agree on. So it's one quote coming from head of product and CEO here.
So the one we have, I want to make sure that I say it correctly because it's a bit, but it is, success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm, which is from Mr. Winston Churchill. And I think for me, maybe I'll let Aaron speak to it as well, why that resonates is just because it's so easy, I think, to look at a company and only see what things have been successful. But what you don't see is just like the hundreds and hundreds of things that failed, you know?
Right.
And those hundreds and hundreds of things that failed are what you do as a creator of a company or as a creator of a mod. When you run into all those errors, when you run into all those times you got to message us and ask us for help, when you're missing commas, when you're, you know, that's the pain of childbirth of, you know, creating something. And that's where you spend, you know, I don't know, 99% of your time is dealing with that, you know, dealing with mistakes in design, mistakes in coding, whatever the case may be. And so little time is actually spent like reveling in the success, you know, and I think it's so tempting to just look at whatever company and just like see that success point and view it as it's, you know, by itself, you know, and the reality is that there's, you know, just a million things I'm sure that we've done wrong since starting. Those to me, I think are much more typical of the innovation and creation experience. You know, we tell students all the time when they either lose their code, when they complain about render times, when they have issues they can't fix, it's like, that's how we know you're a real developer, is if you can come and talk about the pain points. You know, that's how we know you're a real animator. If you're complaining about render times, you're golden, right? That's what they're complaining about at Pixar right now, I guarantee you, you know? And so I think that labor and that pain of failure while still staying, you know, optimistic and enthusiastic behind it is one of the most difficult things to do. And I just think that for me is the creative process. It's just that. And so it's encouraging that someone like him has said that he agrees.
Right. Sort of don't let the failure get in the way.
Yeah.
Aaron, anything you want to add to Churchill's quote here?
Well, it's hard to improve on Winston. Winnie, I call him. I think I relate more to the without loss of enthusiasm part, you know, just putting on a just positive attitude throughout all of it, you know, just it's so fun. So that's what I love about it.
Yeah. And especially with this market, that positive attitude needs to come through.
Yeah.
Cooper, you remember my favorite Japanese proverb?
Yeah.
What is it?
fall down 7 times, get up 8.
That's right. So fall down 7 times, get up 8, which is that same sort of notion, right? It's the, you know, we're all going to have failures. What matters is if we keep going or not and what we learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Guys, I appreciate you taking time for the interview. I know it's actually after hours for you, and I thank you for doing this and sharing a little bit about Youth Digital with everyone. How can people find out more about the company, the products, and what did you just want to leave everyone with?
I mean, youthdigital.com is our website. Mm-hmm. And I think hopefully everything encompassed in this interview. It's been around that central theme of we want to teach kids how to create. You know, that's mm-hmm. our sort of very singular goal. And that's what we try to do in each one of our courses, no matter what. You know, whether it's Java or fashion design, every course has the same structure, every course has the same end goals, you know, but that's what we're after is teaching kids how to create just like we wanted to when they were their age.
Very good. And listeners, you know, I don't do commercials, but this is an easy product to recommend. Cooper and I are actually affiliates of Youth Digital since we saw that opportunity. So there will be a link to learn more. Just know it is an affiliate link. So you get the best deal that's out there, and we get a little recognition for providing that too. But thanks again for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening. This was an especially fun interview to do and the first one that my son helped with. I hope you'll share it with other product managers and innovators, as well as parents who want their kids to learn more about technology. Find the summary of the discussion and the full transcript, along with the video that I asked Aaron about, at theeverydayinnovator.com/088. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.